Welcome, everyone, to No Filter Sports. It is Monday, October 14th. Eli Zarrett, along with Denny McClain and Bob Page. And, man, so much to do today, from Michigan and Michigan State talk, the Lions playing Monday Night Football tonight, Monday, October 14th. More on the juiced ball. On and on it goes. Great stuff. But let's start with last night's, which would be Sunday night's.
Very good. Yeah.
Game two of the ALCS, right, the championship series, Astros and Yankees, 3-2 in 11 innings. Let's start with the end and work back, as Carlos Correa ended this game well into the night.
Here's a fly ball in the right. This game is over.
That was off A.J. Happ. And Justin Verlander had pitched. You know, it was an amazing game. You know, and many people talk about, you know, pitching duels and versus high scoring games. This was a game where 15 pitchers pitched, 9 of them Yankees. Together, the teams only had 13 hits in 11 innings. That's 22 half innings. That's about a hit every inning. And yet, a great and dramatic ball game. And one where, as you were saying, it seemed like everybody's on the brink of it falling apart or blowing up, and it never did.
Yeah, you know, the pitching was so good at times, and so good it appeared that the ball game was about to blow open with both clubs at one time. But here they are, 7 1/3 innings out of the bullpen, and they both had the same numbers. Both teams struck out 14. Both teams walked 6. And, of course, they played 11 innings. But the bottom line was the pitching was consistent when they got in trouble. Every time they got in trouble, and I've never seen so many guys pitch behind hitters and get so many guys out, especially 3-0 counts. And here's a new trick. Everybody's swinging at a 3-0 pitch.
They want to hit home runs.
Pete Rose was talking about that, remember? Right. Yeah.
The pitchers got to come in with it. Guys want to hit home runs.
It's total disbelief, though. You want to, you know, why take a chance? Most of the you got a 50-50 chance of throwing a guy a strike, right? And these guys are standing there hitting pop-ups on 3-0. Because if you made up your mind that you're going to hit the ball on a 3-0 count, you're going after any pitch that's close.
Yeah.
And what happens? They're bad pitchers.
Yeah, you know what, Denny? In your day, of course, and when we were all coming up, if it's 3-0, you know, you're going to look down at the third base coach. He's going to give you the take sign. I get the idea that ain't nobody looking at no third base coaches anymore. It's just green light all the time.
Bob, I think you're right. I don't think anybody gives a damn about signs anymore, except to steal them, which Houston apparently is doing. And all of the game, they don't play the game anymore. The 3-0 count is a part of the game. 3-0, you take a pitch. Maybe you take two pitches, depending upon who the hitter is. But boy, I'll tell you, this is a different game than I recall.
And yet, 4 of the 5 runs in the game came in via the home run. Aaron Judge, Springer, and of course Correa, that we just listened to, that won the game.
And in another 40 years, the guys who are playing today are going to be sitting around in whatever form talk shows take. And they say, boy, you know, it's just a different game than when we played, man. I don't know what's going on. Just like I read this great interview years ago with Ty Cobb, who was just ripping the modern players, you know, going off on Mays and Aaron and Mantle. Well, they just don't play the game the way we did. We knew how to play the game. These kids don't know. It always happens that way.
Speaking of the ball, you know, and when we had Rose on the other day, and Pete mentioned the stat, because he was all over the baseball, you know, and I don't blame players from previous eras looking at the home runs today and scoffing a bit, because, you know, they manufactured runs back then. We discussed that with Pete. He was one of the great singles hitters of all time. His job was to get on base to lead off, not hit an opposite field home run like the guys try and do now. And he gave this AAA stat. He said this is the first year that they used the major league ball in AAA, and it went from 3,500 home runs, that's his stat, I don't know, to 5,600 in 1 year. And he said the difference is they put a super ball in the middle as opposed to a cork back when you guys played. Well, here's the other – Now what?
Now they're coming out with a new idea.
Well, Verlander, who was one of the most vocal when this whole thing blew up this year on the baseball, saying how they're juiced and he doesn't care what Major League Baseball pretends they don't know, and they had just bought the Rawlings factory that makes them, as if it's all, you know, this, it's all orchestrated. Well, now he says that he didn't want to draw his teammates' attention to the latest round of suspicious data. He didn't want to distract them before game 5 against the Rays, but he said MLB just came out with a report, they haven't changed it, right? He says, I guess we got to believe that. He says that the ball is different now in the playoffs. And Cardinals manager Mike Schilt Mike Schilt, who none of us ever heard of until he became until the playoffs came, said that he thought a ball that Marcell Ozuna had hit should have gone out. And he said his team's analytics department had done their own research and concluded that the ball is flying 4.5 fewer feet on average in the postseason.
4.5 feet less.
For goodness sake, please just play the game. Matt Noakes hit 38 home runs one year for the Detroit Tigers. I said, boy, the ball looks like it's juiced this year. Whatever. Just play the game.
But Judge hit a 425-foot home run last night.
Yep, that's because he's 6 feet eight, 270 pound, and pumps iron twice 2 hours a day.
What are you going to do, argue with his ability?
Well, it only would have been 421 feet or 420.5 feet if it had been the old ball.
That's and exactly Verlander, right. And on that home run, Verlander hung a breaking ball to him up in the zone. What does he expect? It's Aaron bleeping Judge. What do you think he's going to do with it?
Let me tell you what Verlander said. One of the many things that he said about the ball. He said, you know, there is something different about the ball. What, Justin? He said, they put the stamp of the playoffs on the ball. All the other balls during the season just say Major League Baseball. So now the stamp is making a difference.
Oh, that's got to affect it. Change the whole game.
I mean, first of all, the pitching is much better than it has been because you got the four of the best teams in baseball are playing each other.
Right,
the pitching has to be better. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there.
Yeah. And the point is, it isn't the center of the ball.
No.
They say it's the drag on the ball. So I don't know how they
change it. This whole thing is a drag. Just play the guy.
Let me tell you, let me give you some effects. Fact about the baseball. When we played, the seams, I've had this ball this year in my hand a number of times, especially when we go down there once in a while, but the seams when we played were a little bit higher, just a little bit higher.
Yeah, you said that.
No, more drag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
More drag. No, not more drag. They actually acted like an airplane
wing. Well, Denny and Eli knows the answer to this question. What would the Buckinghams from Chicago, Illinois say about
this?
Kind of
a drag.
It's kind of a drag.
That's right. They would have. Right away, they would have broke into a 1, 2, 3, 4.
In fact, Brandon, when you get a chance, print me up the mailbag, because there was a question for Denny in there.
I got it all. You don't have to worry about that.
I just like to read along. I don't like to just give you the segment.
I don't care what you like. I'm running the mailbag segment of the show.
I just want to have backup, okay?
Let me tell you how bad the home run production is, all right? The Yankees are hitting 1.5 home runs every 9 innings. That's a lot of home runs.
You are figure Filbert today.
That's pretty good.
I'm just telling you, because of all of these stats.
In the postseason, you're saying?
Yeah. So No, this is 1.5 for the season. Every 9 innings, they're hitting 1.5 home runs.
That would be, 160 plus 80 would be 260 on the season.
Yeah. That's exactly.
No,
that's
240
exactly
on the season,
last year, the Yankees hit 267 home runs.
Yeah. Okay.
Now I have a few more stats here, and I'm going to tie this in with some unfinished business from the last show.
Oh, geez.
Remember this? When I said on that program that the amazing Jose Altuve is going to the Hall of Fame, and you, Dennis Dale McClain, said, he's not. The 5'6" Altuve in 9 years in the big leagues, he won't even be 30 till next May, has already won 3 batting championships. He's a lifetime 315 hitter.
Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
Can I reconsider?
I think he is.
6 All-Star game appearances. He's won 5 Silver Sluggers and won a Gold Glove in 2015 because he's a great fielder, too.
Maybe he'll be the shortest Hall of Famer of all time. What if they keep
and there's another short. There's another short second baseman that he's in the exact same league with. That guy's name was Joe Morgan. And you talk about Charlie Gehringer and Sandberg and Eddie Collins and all those guys. This guy's way up with the greatest who ever lived.
This guy has such power in his legs. He's the best hitter I've ever seen in the legs. He really is.
Yep.
I mean, he's a strong guy. You know the nice thing about him? He hustles.
Yeah.
All the time. I love this guy. You got to love that guy. You really
do. I think also.
He's a Chico.
We talk about Chico.
No, su nombre es actualmente José, señor, no Chico.
¿Cómo está, Chico?
No muy malo para viejo.
Jose Altuve is 5'6", but Wee Willie Keeler is in the Hall of Fame, and he was 5'4". Outfielder.
Ooh.
He played for 19 years.
I know Freddie Patek didn't make the Hall of Fame.
No,
he was
but what a great guy he was. You know what I think about, though, speaking of small players? If you look back at that era, and don't we wish we could have just seen one game in 1912? How cool would that have been? The guy who looks like he fits right in with that era is the Yankees, Brett Gardner.
Five foot eight, scrappy, never stops hustling.
He really looks like old school, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And scrappy. the pants are up to the knees.
Yeah.
And you know why he wears his pants that high? Because of the strike zone. You're an umpire, you know that. You got to watch yourself when a guy rolls his pants up where he's trying to get strikes.
Bob will disagree with that because anything you say about umpiring, he disagrees
with. That's not true. Oh, and by the way, you know, it's funny. We had a little conversation about that in which I say the mantra of umpires that players don't know much about umpiring.
It just dawned on me.
I got into a conversation years ago. I'm not sure how we went there with your ex-teammate and friend and one of the great guys ever, Jim Northrup. And so we're talking about umpiring. I said, Jimmy, what do you know about umpiring? He says, only that I wouldn't want to be one.
Yeah.
That was his response.
Jimmy thought they all sucked. They really. And about 50% right.
Yeah, so you know, CeCe Sabathia is eligible to pitch in this series, but there are a lot of undecideds down the road.
Well, he did last night.
Sabathia, yeah. Okay. I'm talking about a starting.
He's not going to start. Not
yeah, I guess not. But anyway, so Phil Mushnick wrote in his New York Post column over the weekend, you think about this, you look at Sabathia, who's always been morbidly obese.
Right.
The medical term.
We think he was obese.
When this guy is pitching, why the hell wouldn't you bunt him? See if he can field that position. But Mushnick says, and he's probably right, most players today don't bunt, don't even know how to bunt. Bunt this guy. Make him get off the mound.
You mean against CeCe?
Yeah. How's he getting anywhere?
Guys don't bunt anymore.
Believe it or not, Lolich, too, they said he was out of shape all the time. You know what they are? They're in shape to pitch.
Right.
That's what they're
but
in
not
shape
to chase
for.
Bunts.
Listen, they all handled their positions rather well. Not very many balls get by a pitcher if he's standing in the middle of the mound. Somebody button the ball down the line, nobody's going to make that play.
And if you go back and look at Mickey Lolich, he wasn't that heavy.
He wasn't that heavy.
Not like Sabathia.
He wasn't svelte, but he was not that heavy.
How much weight do they promote on the CC, please?
Oh, he's got to weigh 350.
Well, he's big.
There's no chance he's 300 pounds.
Oh, I think he could be 300
pounds. And how tall is he?
He's like 6'3", 300.
He is currently listed at 305 pounds.
Thank you.
Which means he's really 330.
But he's gone up
and really
down.
He's really 350.
Yeah, he goes up and down.
A couple years ago, he was thin, and he couldn't pitch well. So he had to put that weight back on.
That's right, too.
Steven Strasburg, today, Monday, October 14th, in case you're listening, after October 14th.
We got listeners who go back and they listen to shows they missed 4 months ago, months ago. So it's a relevant point.
Okay. Anyway, Steven Strasburg can put a chokehold on that series. Go up 3-0 on the Cardinals. One note, and I don't want to get into it too deeply, but when I heard in game one that Daniel Hudson was not going to be there, he was on paternity leave, and I guess I guess I'm old school.
Outrageous.
And then his daughter, his wife gave birth to his third child, not his first, that morning, so he could have gone to the game. Instead, and as it turns out, what's his name? Doolittle saved for Washington that night, but he watched the game from his hotel room with his wife. And then came back. Now, it to his credit, he deleted his social media accounts a couple of years ago, so to foster a positive mindset. He was aware of some of the backlash on Twitter, but he just didn't get into it. He says family is everything. I think the Players Association almost insists that you take advantage of the paternity leave, because then if you waive it, then the next guy who takes it is going to be, they're going to say, well, the other guy waived it. So I still can't believe it.
But the rules are consistent. You can waive it and you can get it the next time. Okay. Yeah. There's nothing that says it's in cement. The rule itself is in cement. So they can take it if they want it. But you know what? A guy, the baby's born, the mother's okay. If this guy doesn't want to go to the ballpark, release him, trade him to Nome, Alaska, send him someplace that nobody can find him or talk to him.
I don't know about that, but I got to say, no husband, unless it happens in the woods back in hundreds of years ago, has ever been of any help at all
Never. In
the birth of a child. In fact, most times men get in the way, and I know that from personal experience.
And I know this. When I was in the minor leagues trying to get back to the big leagues, I don't know if I've told this story, but when the Vita Blue and Kenny Holtzman took my wife to the hospital, and the nurse kept asking Vita Blue, are you the father? Are you the father?
That's funny.
Well, Danny, you have several children. What did you do when you were pitching and your kids were born? Did you take time off?
Well, it was only twice.
I don't think, let's see, Denny was born in spring training. Timmy was born in spring training. Kristen was born during the season.
But you adopted them. They were
Danny and Timmy were but we already had them technically.
I see.
Before the birth. And then
it wasn't an issue with you then.
No, not at all. And now, it wasn't an issue in the game at all.
Right. Now we talk about as we were a moment ago the size of certain pitchers, and we're talking about CeCe Sabathia and everything like that. But isn't it amazing how many of the pitchers you see now are between 6'6" and 6'9"?
It's amazing.
In string beads. Now, if you want to know how thin some of these guys are,
amazing.
Police arrested San Diego Padres pitcher Jacob Nix after he was breaking into a suburban Phoenix home through a doggy door? What? That's how thin they are. He breaks in through a doggy door.
The
homeowner tases him. And now this guy faces counts of criminal trespassing. Documents indicate the 23-year-old Nix was under the influence of either alcohol, drugs, or both. He tries to crawl through the doggy door. Before 4 o'clock in the morning, the homeowner, for whatever reason, is up. He sees him, some face coming in your doggy door, and he kicks the face. He kicks him right in the face. Wouldn't you do the same thing?
He didn't know him?
No. So Nix told responding police officers he thought he was entering his house through the doggy door. But he doesn't have a doggy door because he doesn't own a dog.
That sounds like that awful story.
Sounds like that cop in Dallas.
Meanwhile, speaking of tall, skinny pitchers, Andrew Miller, another former Tiger. He's a number one draft pick by the Tigers, wasn't he?
Sure.
Still pitching. He's got to be 6'7", about 130 pounds.
Yeah. I think he's right at under 7. Isn't he 6'10"?
No, he's not that tall.
How big is he? Yeah, I think he's about 6. Say, I'm going to guess 6'7", 190.
I don't think he's 200 pounds, that's for sure.
6'7".
6'7". How much do you weigh?
They're going to list him over 200.
210. Yeah. All right.
10. Yeah. I think that's promoted a little bit.
Let's move on. We're going to talk a lot of football to talk about. Michigan State, Lions playing.
Do you have to pay royalties to Bryant Gumbel when you say that? And now, let's move on.
Star Lincoln. Hey, Lincoln sales are soaring these last few months. In fact, Star Lincoln had its best month in over a year. Not because of me, because of these amazing new SUVs that are taking the market by storm. They just came out with the Corsair that goes along with the Aviator, Star Lincoln showroom just last month. Aviator lauded as a new category leader, best three-row luxury SUV in its price class. There's also the Nautilus, I lease one from Star. Love that car. The adaptive cruise control, the collision alert has saved me a couple of times. The audio is great. I'm excited every time I get behind the wheel. Come see Star's gorgeous showroom or buy your new Lincoln with the effortless ownership experience. Go to starlincoln.com, order your model, features, color, then just roll in the Star and pick it up. It's all part of the Star treatment that has made Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership. You can find it at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield.
Now, once you get that financing for your car, you can go to Hall Financial and get a new mortgage.
Okay.
Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in 2019. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring they feel like a name and not a number. What if I told you that Hall Financial will not only walk you through the process of buying your home, but provide you with a top realtor in your area? Who doesn't want that type of service? Hall Financial knows how to deliver five-star service, that's for sure. That means your schedule, your availability at night and on weekends. They are going to work for you, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial? Call them today at 248-308-5000. If you're looking to purchase or refinance, you can do that too. Or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. They are an equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435, 248-308-5000.
And as you know, I called them and I saved 1.25% when I refied my little mortgage. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Lions play.
One other baseball note, by the way.
Go ahead.
You know, the Tigers, thanks to Al Avila and this reign of terror, are scattered everywhere. Do you believe in that National League series? The first two games won by Washington. Game one, Victor, Aníbal Sánchez. Game two, Max Scherzer is unbelievable, as he always is. I mean, come on. It's just, you look all over baseball. Justin Verlander on Sunday night.
It's unbelievable.
What the hell is going on?
The question I have, and I think it's bad luck for the Tigers. I mean, they gave Sanchez
Every chance.
They did at the end. Yeah.
I rarely tweet because I'm just really getting into it, anything in action. But I'm watching the other night, and Anibal has got a no-hitter through five innings. And I go, I wonder if I had told Tiger fans in 2017 when this poor guy got his brains beat in every single game. He made Jordan Zimmerman's season look like a Cy Young season this year. It was just the saddest thing to see a pitcher's career implode the way Sanchez had appeared to implode. And so my question is it that the Tigers, who didn't believe in analytics or didn't have any, they didn't have the high-tech video machines that helped Verlander really regain his form, become as good at 36 as he was at 26? Is that why guys like Sanchez and Verlander improve when they go somewhere else? I don't know, but it's either really bad luck or really bad something. I don't know.
Yeah, ask the guy sitting across from you, because Denny McClain pitched for some great ball clubs and for some horrendous ball clubs. So could it just have been the mindset with Sanchez?
It could be. It's a good point.
When I went to Oakland, Washington, I knew that was going to be a very difficult, long year, not only because of Ted Williams, but because the ball club was so bad. But when I went to Oakland, it was like somebody put a battery in me and I was ready to go. I'm running twice as many laps every day. I'm throwing out.
Two? You ran two laps?
Man, I ran four. Actually,
shocked.
Actually, four or five.
Don't tell me you did sprints in the outfield, too. But I won't believe that.
Did sprints in the outfield? Man, listen, I was ready.
And he played Pepper, too, Bob.
Those are those spring training sprints, you know, where they get out in the right field warning track, you know, and they jog about 20 feet.
We ran all the way to center field. Now, listen, let me tell you what happens, though. You take a deep breath. You've got a rejuvenation. You know, all of a sudden, you're throwing strikes. And I want to compare everything to him right now. All of a sudden, he's throwing strikes. Well, he never threw strikes here. He walked everybody. He was scared to death. And when he did throw a strike, what happened? Wound up as an analytic number. The movement on his ball is better. His confidence, when you see him on the mound, he's walking around like he owns the mound now. He really is. And that's been the most impressive thing that I've seen with him, that he's walking like he's in charge again. He's sharper. He looks like he's in the game. He never looked like he was in a game here either.
Now, how about this in fairness? He's 35. So he was 33 a couple of years ago. I always look at Frank Tanana as an example of a guy who lost his fastball and as he got older became a crafty pitcher.
Nah, I don't think that applies.
Is he craftier because he's only throwing 91?
91 is 91. I got news for you.
Denny's day, that's a good major league fastball. Yeah.
No, not during Denny's. Denny's day had the same kind of velocity on baseballs that they have today. Believe you me. I mean, when you...
A few guys through 100.
I'll name 20 for you if you want 20 now, and I'll give you another 50 tomorrow. But I got news
and
for you.
And I'd have to fight you on probably 75% of them.
All right, go ahead. Well, you know, we had to test it with a dog all the time.
Ahead.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
But I forgot what the hell I was going to say.
Yeah, that's good. Let's move on then.
See what you did? But you distracted him.
There's one thing about him. His velocity is still good. 91 miles an hour for a guy 35 years old is exceptional.
And sometimes more. He hit 92 and 93 in a few pitches.
But let me tell you what he's doing. He's getting his breaking ball over when he's behind a hitter.
Yeah.
That's the difference between winning and losing. Well, listen, he's not going to win a Cy Young.
Yeah.
You know, he never has. But he is so good now with taking command of the game. That's the big thing. He's taking command of
the game. Well, you can parse this any way you want, as we've been doing. But as I said, was it the last show? You wait and see. When the Tigers get rid of this dead weight, Jordan Zimmerman next year, he going to win 17 games somewhere.
Right. It's the exact same situation. He is Annabelle Sanchez, 17, is Jordan Zimmerman, 19.
And he's such a – we've said this a thousand times. He's such a good guy. Well, I mean, he helps everybody, does the right thing all the time. It's you really pull for a guy like that.
I thought it was interesting about Sanibel is that – I'm sorry, Annabel – is that he's got that turn towards second base before he pitches, and they steal like crazy off him.
You know, he doesn't care. He just doesn't. Listen, I had one of the worst moves in Major League Baseball, too. There's only one way to stop a guy from stealing second base. Don't let him get on.
So you see that guy sitting over there in the New York Giants dugout, Bill Terry? Bill Terry's a nice guy. Nice guys finish last.
Thanks,
Leo
Howard.
The Lip, yes. Allegedly. Yes.
Not all of them finish last.
So Matthew Stafford tonight. And I think if the Lions are 4-point dogs, last I looked in Green Bay, they could easily win that game. He'll become the 21st quarterback in NFL history to throw for 40,000 passing yards. By the way, Bobby Lane played 15 years and only threw for 27,000 yards. So it's obviously a very different game. So this is an interesting thing, and I think the Free Press quoted it. A couple of weeks ago, the Kansas City noted that the Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes had thrown 36% of Troy Aikman's touchdown passes in about 8% of the games.
Yeah.
Of course, Troy said, talk to me about Mahomes as 33% of my Super Bowl titles. So the numbers are kind of, you know, passe because it's just a very, very different game. But we'll see. If the Lions win tonight, they're right there now. They're 6,000. They're plus 6,000 win the Super Bowl. Is that 60-1 or 600-1?
600-1.
Is it 600-1?
I think it's 600.
No, I think it's.
All right. Well, let's keep in mind.
60-1 or 100.
It could be
60-1.
It could be 10 zillion to 1. They're not going to win the Super Bowl.
It's 60-1. If they win tonight, it'll be down to 35-1.
Okay. Let's keep in mind, of course, that most of you folks are hearing this after this Monday night game has already been decided. Kudos to Matt LaFleur, the new Green Bay Packers head coach. He's a Mount Pleasant, Michigan native, great small college quarterback at Saginaw Valley. And going into the game, they were 4-1. And I see the Detroit Free Press on Monday morning had a big story. Well, this is a good game, man. The lead of the NFC North. Who's going to win the NFC?
Who do you like this game?
Who is the winner? You know, the Vikings are now 4-2 after Kirk Cousins went nuts in that win over Philadelphia.
Finally.
Your beloved Bears, I think, are 3-2 right now.
Right.
So let's not put too much.
I don't think you look at that really. You look at, can they get to 10 wins? And for the Lions to get to 10 wins, they got to finish 10-5-1 is going to be pretty tough.
Well, isn't this the first time in a long time we've been able to look at this team and since Wayne was here that we know they're competitive? They can win on any time they go out there now for a change.
I think they can.
They're
much better.
And he's got a couple of guys that can catch the ball. He's got not only one guy, he's got two or three guys now that can catch the ball. Makes a big difference.
Right. Well, I was thinking about it today when I thought about the Super Bowl odds, et cetera. Because I think if they win the Packer game, people will start to at least think maybe this is the year. Of course, if it's the year, it'll be 62 years since they last won. And so this name came up.
What is the definition of fool's gold?
But whatever.
Fool's gold.
This is what. And by the way, the Lions are always the most the hottest topic in town of all the sports teams we have. Nobody generates more interest, whether it's positive or negative, than the Lions. Anyway, yesterday, Lamar Jackson of Baltimore, an amazing two-way quarterback, became the first in the Super Bowl era to pass for 200 and run for 150 yards. Well, three others have, okay? Others who have run for 150-plus, there's only three others. Michael Vick did it twice. Kaepernick did it once. And the other one was Tobin Rote. Oh, my goodness.
Tobin Rote.
Tobin Rote was the quarterback of the 1957.
I was going to say, wait, let's test the new generation. We got a 35-year-old producer here, Brandon Mega. I want to know if he'd ever even heard of Tobin Rote before.
Tobin Rote, I learned today.
Yes.
Just today. Until today, you had no idea.
Because I told him. Go ahead.
Was the winning quarterback for the 57 championship Lions, but I always thought it was Bobby Lane.
Well, Bobby Lane broke his leg in the second to the last game of the season.
Fell off a beer stool.
Might have, who knows? It was actually in a pileup in a game. And since Lane was so, you just couldn't count on him because he drank excessively. Right. He got hurt a lot. And so they had Tobin Rote, who was a fine backup quarterback who had come up with Green Bay in 1950. And sure enough, he plays in the championship game in 57. And he could run. In fact, here it is early in the game with Tobin Rote running.
Second down 9. Rote fades the pass. Now he runs up the middle. He's at the 15. He's at the 10. The 5. The 3. The 1 yard line. He's right down within a foot or so of that goal line.
That wasn't Van Patrick. Who was it?
I don't know who that
is. Did you recognize that voice?
No,
I didn't.
No.
I know Chris Schenkel was part of it, but
Chris Platitude. You know why they called Chris Schenkel Chris Platitude? Things like
he never said a bad thing about anybody.
Not only that, he said in an interview that he would never announce the name of any player who fumbled in a football game he was broadcasting because it would be too embarrassing to the player's family. That's what he actually said.
They won that game 59-14, their last championship 62 years ago, and this was a big play because Tobin Rote also threw for 4 touchdowns in that game.
Rote throws deep. He's at Doran's there. He has it at the 40, the 30, the 20, the 10. He's going all the way.
So as the Lions move towards the Super Bowl after they beat Green Bay tonight.
Oh, absolutely. You're gonna
have I don't know how many 57 Lions are still alive. Joe Schmidt is.
Dorn Dibble's alive. There are a lot of guys.
And I played golf with Roger Zatkoff a couple of years ago. Yeah. He's still alive.
But I will say this, though, again, as a person who grew up in Detroit and the sun rose and set on the Detroit Lions for me, Isn't it pathetic that in the year 2019, we're talking about the 57 Lions? Because ain't nothing been happening ever since, especially when Billy Ford got control of that team. And we're talking about something that happened 62 years ago.
And our most listened to show was when we had Wayne Fonts on.
That's
because
exactly
there is
right.
The Lions are just magic in this town. And having worked in sports talk radio, I know that football season is by far the biggest listenership because people care about football and they either love or hate the Lions, but in any case, they're always engaged, never apathetic.
Now, all you gamblers out there, you need to take a little hint that I'm going to give to you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Get ready to bet the other way, folks.
Folks, you bet the way I tell you to today.
Oh,
the over and under is 45. 45 is the over and under. The Packers are 22nd in the league in defense. Put the two together, and you have to take the over.
Under.
Over.
Under.
Over. Yeah, they're 22nd in defense, for God's sake.
I look for a low-scoring game.
You know how many points they give up a game? 25. Yeah. 25 to 30.
Well, I think the Lions should be able to score at least 10 points. That'll help, you know.
They're going to score more than that.
You're taking the over, huh?
I'm taking the over, which means you're taking the under.
speaking of the opposite, this is funny, okay? Washington was leading St. Louis one game to none, and they had a 1-0 lead in game two against the Cards, and Adam Eaton faced starter Adam Wainwright. He was expecting on a 3-2 count, it should be a heater. He said, you know what? I'm going to do what George Costanza did. I'm going to go the opposite way and said, I'm waiting for a breaking ball. That's what happened. His two-run double won the game.
And I mentioned this before, but, you know,
it's hilarious.
Eaton, I don't remember how or what the circumstances were, but Adam Eaton met and eventually married a Detroit girl. He lives in Detroit in the offseason.
Oh, really?
I did not know that. As Johnny Carson would say, I did not know that.
Well, we should have him on the show.
John, that'd be a little difficult.
You want to go to Michigan or Michigan State? You pick it, buddy.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go to Michigan, okay?
Start with your alma mater. We usually do.
You know, my old roommate Don underwent a big change last year. He said, I'm not going to live and die with it anymore. I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to let it ruin my weekend. And this is what happens with Michigan fans. They take it very personally. They believe that their team should win every game, and they believe in the whole Michigan man thing. Drew was talking about that. You know, Drew didn't grow up here. He's been in the media here for 30 years, and he sees this part of the Michigan cult that gets very upset when they lose. They don't like any criticism, and they expect that they're going to be champions every year. And I think it's time to realize that the image and the brand and the identity of the Michigan football team has changed. We got to learn to manage our expectations more. They are not an elite team.
That's what I've been saying all along.
It's not the Big Two, Little Eight.
Harbaugh's won 10 games three times in his career there so far. They got a good program.
But they beat nobody.
Just not what it was. What it was.
When you're 1-9, listen, it's unacceptable at Michigan to be 1-9 against top 10 teams, to lose 4 straight to Ohio State, to be 4-11 in the last 15 bowl games. That's not emblematic of the victor's valiant. So when Brady Quinn and people like you in the media say, what are you saying, Michigan fans? You've gone from 6.5 wins to 9.5 wins. Be happy. No. Michigan fans aren't happy. And so I'm saying,
tough noogies. Now listen, it ain't coming back to the way it was.
It's the only team that I really root for. I like to see the local teams win, but your college logo is near and dear to your heart. There's nothing like it. And so you have a different sense of winning and losing and loyalty with your college team. And I've got to the point where I don't expect it anymore. The bar has to be lowered. We are the leaders and above average, not the leaders and best.
Touche. Now, you remember when Bo and Woody would stockpile 185 players?
Yeah.
You know, and they'd give them this recruiting line.
Actually, 120.
You come to Michigan and you'll be a champion. No, you're not going to sit on the bench. You'll be fifth string and never get into a game. But then the NCAA cut the scholarship numbers drastically,
right,
which meant all those kids were now starting to go to Michigan State and Iowa and Wisconsin and places like that. You know, Michigan 63, Northwestern 3 just isn't coming back again. Sorry, folks.
I was there when Bo railed to us week in, week out about Title IX. Because Title IX came around, was it the early 70s? I think 72 or 73.
Yeah.
And he bitched up a storm that they're going to take away my football players, you know, because women have to have as many athletes. He had a point, but they took him away, and it became a lot more difficult for him to, like you say, stockpile. As we had Huckleby on, there were 7 or 8 running backs that were all good at the same time.
It wasn't fun back then because, of course, if you're from Michigan, you waited half the season for the Michigan-Michigan State game, and then you just waited for Michigan-Ohio State. Nothing else
That's
mattered.
It. Those are still the two games we wait on. That's it.
Well, I don't know about that. Listen, Michigan's at Penn State this Saturday. I'm really waiting for that one.
Anyway,
but that's not the game we're targeting right now. We're still targeting MSU, and we're targeting Ohio State. That's
what
we're waiting on.
You can't be serious.
I am.
You can't be serious.
I am.
Ohio State is more important. It's more important for Michigan to beat Ohio State than Michigan State. Anyway, we didn't say that Michigan beat Illinois 42-25, but they went from 28-0. To 25, was it 28?
It was 28-0 early in the second quarter.
To 28-25.
Right, that's right.
And so after the game, Harbaugh says, "I'm pleased with the way the offense played. Thought they performed extremely well. Shea Patterson had a great game and made some big plays when we needed." That's what a coach should say. I don't fault him for saying that, but the Michigan fans say, no, it's not good enough. And frankly, it has to be good enough because that's what it is.
The key quote from Jimmy after that game was, "I believe in our team. And we saw the evidence today." The evidence today was you're up 28-0 against a vastly inferior opponent.
Terrible.
Whose starting quarterback, your former protege, is not even in the game. You should have put the heel down on their necks, and instead it's 28-25 at some point.
That's right.
You know, they got some issues here, and I think when you look at the continuing Michigan turnovers, and you look at the fact they got back in the game this way, I think there's some coaching issues there.
Okay. Well, I think the offense, and I know they scored 40 points for a change, but I still think we got the wrong offensive coordinator. I think that I think they'd like to start all over if they could, but because I still don't understand why the coach, who was an NFL very, very good quarterback, isn't calling the plays. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he never even thought about putting in a professional offense into this team. He never created anything. At least, unfortunately, as to what we saw.
Well, I'll disagree with that because he put in a pro-style offense that doesn't really work very well in the college game. And this is supposedly the spread now, but it looks kind of the same to me.
Yep.
Don't pretend to be an expert, but it does.
All right. So let's take one short pause
before we get to Michigan State because I got a lot to say about that also. Also want to tell you that convenience is what getting eye surgery provides you in your lifestyle. Never have to deal with glasses, contacts. I don't know how anybody ever dealt with contact lenses. I tried them for a few minutes when I had glasses, and that was a miserable experience. Or reading glasses, too. Dr. Yaldo is Michigan's premier LASIK surgeon. He's done over 30,000 custom LASIK procedures. Most people get better than 20/20 vision. It's called supervision when you get 20/15. That's what I got when I got LASIK. It is truly amazing. And there's a lot of talk out there about low-priced LASIK. You really shouldn't believe it. You go there, you find out what the real price is. Believe me, it's not $250 an eye. But if you get an offer from anybody, Dr. Yada will beat that LASIK offer. And for those of you 45-plus with reading issues, get the multifocal lens exchange. You will never need reading glasses again. You'll never get cataracts. It is a modern miracle, that surgery. Get the best, pay the least. Dr. Yaldo gives you a free evaluation. Call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. And the pizza man, okay? We have bought No Filter Sports. We have bought a square from Freddy the Pizza Man for the upcoming promotion. Freddy the Pizza Man and his foundation are dedicated to helping kids with autism and their families. He's donated over $20,000 to assist Michigan schools to equip sensory rooms that help teachers optimize the learning potential of those with autism and special needs. His son has autism. He's seen the impact these rooms can have. Here's what you do. You buy a Super Bowl square for $75 like we did. Go to FreddyThePizzaMan.com. That's F-R-E-D-I, ThePizzaMan.com. And hope to win some of the prize money. Again, it's on Saturday, October 26th. You can meet Super Bowl champ Eddie Murray and see his trophy. He won it with Dallas. You see radio guys Jeff Rieger, Tom Masway, and others at Freddy the Pizza Man Pizzeria in Melvindale. I know about autism. I won an Emmy for a Channel 7 special in 2013 called The Circle Never Ends. See it on YouTube. You'll break your heart when you see what families go through, and you want to participate with Freddy's promotion to send $75 for a Super Bowl square. Again, go to FreddyThePizzaMan.com. Help him do his part to fight autism.
How many squares are there?
(Clears throat)
Well, with the three of us, there's one for sure, and that would be you.
Well, isn't it 10? Aren't there 100
squares? There's one square here in this group, and that would be Dan.
No, your creativity is beyond belief.
But there are 100 squares. Anyway, you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Before we get to state,
go ahead.
Again, I want to say
how long are you going to spend on state? A minute?
We just started. No, more than a minute.
Maybe about 15 minutes.
It's brutal.
Before we get to state, I told you guys on this show that Michigan would beat Iowa and they would be 5-1 going into Penn State.
Yes,
big deal.
This is next Saturday night now.
Big deal.
Coast to coast. ESPN's game day originating.
Yes.
This is a huge game. And on this game, Michigan's season will turn. Harbaugh can have a great year if they can win at Happy Valley. If they don't, especially if they get beaten badly, boy, the heat's going to be turned up. This is a huge game.
They go there as 8-point dogs. I saw the opening line, which sounds realistic.
Where, Penn State?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think Penn State's a super team.
No, I don't either.
They're ranked. They're top 10. So many. Are they top 10? Are they 10 now, I think?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, ahead of Michigan.
But certainly, I don't believe they're in Wisconsin's or Ohio State's class. But, you know, you look at what happened to Michigan State. Obviously, they lose 38-0.
Penn State is eighth. Eighth?
Yeah, okay. You know.
No, in the seven. Excuse me. They're number seven.
In fairness to Michigan State, not that they deserve any fairness, but getting blown out 38-0. Wisconsin has scored the first 73 points against Michigan and Michigan State. They scored the first 35 against Michigan,
right,
and the first 38 and the last 38 against State. But, you know, Michigan State's in tough shape. They're an average Big Ten team below.
Yeah, who besides me as an alumnus watched that game among us? Anybody watch that game?
I watched part of it.
So that game's only 17-0 now, and it's mid-third quarter. And here's Cody White out of Novi, Michigan, breaking free.
Wide open down the left side.
And Lewerke, he didn't choke this time and overthrow him. He never saw him.
You know what? I thought
could have changed the game.
I thought the kid was waving at the crowd.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable, wasn't it?
By the way, you want the funniest line of the day?
Go ahead.
The winner of the Michigan and Penn State game, the winner will hereby solidify itself as a primary threat to Ohio State in the Big Ten.
Well, they're a threat.
Oh, my God.
They're a threat. Anyway,
I think Wisconsin would probably be the primary threat to Ohio State. So you look at that game, and now, of course, because instead of being 17-7, it's 24-0 when they came back and they scored. And then it goes to 31-0, and lo and behold, Mr. Lewerke comes out. And who comes in? Rocky Lombardi. I've been telling you about Rocky for some time now. Iowa wrestling champion, great athlete, great kid. He was a great athlete, great kid. Looks like he'd be a real good football player, but not a quarterback. This guy has zero feel for the ball. Zero. And wasn't it fitting that the game ended on a tip pass and interception at the goal line when Michigan State looked like it finally at least might not be shut out?
Is there a point here?
They don't have anybody to play quarterback next year.
Okay.
Now,
as I said last show,
Mark D'Antonio in the best of times looks like he's drank the bitter beer. Remember those commercials a few years ago?
He's got problems.
He rarely smiles. Occasionally, I think when they played in for the national championship 4 or 5 years ago, he did break a smile at some point. He looked particularly distressed, as you would imagine. And then after the game, as we know, because we speculated this is his last year, he didn't hire anybody new on offense or as a coaching staff, but he for some reason shuffled the various assistant coaches. Here's the question and answer after the game.
7 games in, was it a mistake to not bring in new offensive staff? And if not so, how do you fix it?
Well, I don't think we ask those questions right now. We're 6-7 games into the schedule. I think that's sort of a dumbass question, to be quite honest with you.
Since when do you have to bleep dumbass? Is that what society's come to? It's 2019. Some dumbass coaching going on down there, up there in Madison, too. And by the way, fellas, don't forget this. Wisconsin plays Illinois this coming Saturday. That's guaranteed 7-0. And then October 26th,
Wisconsin
at Ohio State.
The same weekend, by the way. And Denny didn't mention this because you're right about Michigan State and Ohio State, but Michigan's got to host Notre Dame.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Day
of course
also.
They do. Yeah, no question.
Now, and what I watched about 3/4 of the press conference he had the other day, Coach, and he looks like he's looking
beaten.
Into the headlights.
He looks like he's beaten.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the headlights, ready to be hit by the car because he's got the other problem he's being chased with.
Right.
And I think that's taken over his life. I really do, because this is a serious matter, obviously.
The alleged cover-up of the recruitment. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. My hope is that D'Antonio does not blow what has been a great coaching career at Michigan State by going out an angry, bitter man, or especially going out by this Watergate-like scandal coming right up here. Remember, he's due a one-time $4.3 million retention bonus in January, a clause built into his contract annually. D'Antonio, they go him $4.3 million if he stays on. So the thing about it is, I believe that Michigan State, now I'm not familiar with the absolute particulars of this, but Michigan State doesn't want to pay that $4.3 million. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
If they fire him, they got to pay it. They got to pay it if they fire him.
I don't know.
How many years does he have left in his contract?
I think it's one of those revolving things.
Well, then why do that
renews itself?
Well, then how do they pay? If it renews every year, then what's the point?
Again, I haven't seen the contract. I just know that come January, if he's still coaching Michigan State, he gets a pay to the order of Mark D'Antonio $4.3 million check.
Well, I believe he'd be the happiest man in the world to be back here next year. But there are so many different avenues coming at him. It's unbelievable.
I don't think he wants to be back here next year. Meanwhile, you may rip on Brian Lewerke, but you know, he may become Michigan State's second Johnny Unitas Golden Arm winner. He's one of 20 finalists. By the way,
So he's going to win the quarterback honor
this
year?
No.
Oh, really?
It's not for his throwing ability. It's for his, not just his athletic accomplishments, but for his character, citizenship, scholastic achievement, leadership qualities, and athletic abilities. Connor Cook became the first Spartan to win that award.
You know, those are good kids. Good for them. But we're talking about winning football games. Now, think about this. Michigan State has two byes in the next 3 weeks. They're off this weekend. They play Penn State at home. Right. No. And then there's another bye.
No.
Yes.
No
and
way.
D'Antonio is understandably pissed about that. This is the first season of the double bye since 2014.
No kidding. I didn't know
the
that.
The reason for this is the calendar this year. An early Labor Day, late Thanksgiving, result in the regular season expanding from 13 weeks to 14 weeks to play 12 games. Now,
one of the kids, that's so the kids can study more.
Naturally. Now, think about this. Think about this, fellas. D'Antonio is going to be 64 next year. He's already had heart problems. I think there's an outstanding chance. In fact, I almost predict that he's not going to be coming back next year. So what is he going to do? He's going to do what Eli Zarrett does. He's going to go count his money and play golf. Jeez. That's all he does.
Well, let me say this.
You know what he might do?
I hope to God he's able to count his money when this whole thing is over with.
He may go coach in the XFL because four of his former players are going to be in the draft, including Connor Cook, wide receiver Keith Bumphrey, safety Curtis Drummond, and offensive lineman Miguel Machado will all be in the XFL's draft that is going to be held this week, October 15th and 16th.
Now, I want you boys to think about this, too, because I haven't seen anybody bring this up anywhere. Could it be possible, especially with a bad time in Happy Valley on Saturday night, could it be possible that we would have new head football coaches at both Michigan State and Michigan next year?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's another thing about Michigan. We got to say about our radio listeners in a moment. You know, this whole thing about a Michigan man, there's another thing Drew mentioned about what this Michigan, it's got to be a Michigan man. Bullitt's got to be a Michigan man.
There was a guy from Miami of Ohio, I think, you know, who came in and did pretty well, right?
But it was because in 1989, Bo said when Bill Frieder left, a Michigan man will coach at Michigan.
Well, Frieder went to Michigan, Bo. You didn't.
Yeah, I know.
Now, did the Michigan man also get a job with the Detroit Tigers? He did a great job there, too.
Oh, man.
Don't even go there.
Let me tell you my little story here. I got 2 minutes to do before I say goodbye to our radio audience. So he gets the job with the Tigers. I don't tell if I told the story or not. And the first day of spring training, he's there. He's got his remember the white Tiger hat that the guys who were in the upper ups wore.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has a big media crew waiting for him, including me. And he walks down to the sidelines at Joker March, and he's sunny spring day. And here's Bo, and there's 50 people around him. We're doing the interview for a couple minutes. He looks over to the plate and says, "Who are all those guys over there by the batting cage?"
Oh, yeah.
I said, "Well, those are the media guys." He goes, "What are they doing there?" I said, "They're doing their job." He said, "But the players are on the field." He said, "They're allowed to stand by the batting cage and talk to the players." He goes, "They are? That's ridiculous."
I came back from New York when Bo was running the Tigers, and I thought I'd drop down and pay my respects to the old man. He's got his own booth down there. He's president of the Tigers. So I go down to say hello. He's alone. He says, "Oh, Bob, come on, sit down." So we just sat together for three innings. He picked my brains, which normally would take about 15 seconds. He picked my brains. Who's that guy who plays first base for the White Sox? Is that guy in center field any good? What's his name again? It was unbelievable. It really
well,
was.
I can tell you, I only met him 3-4 times in my whole life. The first time I met him, I met him down at the pizza place down there in Ann Arbor. And
Domino's.
And he said to me, "Hi, I'm Bo Schembechler." I said, "God, Lord knows I know who you are." I said, "I'm Denny McClain." He says, "You won 30 ball games? You got to be kidding."
My favorite bowl.
He said, "You're 300 pounds.
And you said, "No, I won 31, jerk off."
My favorite bow line was after the Ernie Harbaugh thing. He said, If I was 10 years older and he was 10 years younger, I'd kick Ernie Harwell's ass. Anyway, we got to say goodbye.
Why did he say that?
Because he fired Ernie.
And Ernie didn't take it.
And then Ernie went to the media and basically said, and all the media was backing Ernie.
Bo looked just like the worst guy
in the
world.
You know, you think about this. Is Ernie Harwell, I know we got to go.
He's got to do the radio.
Is Ernie Harwell the most beloved figure in the history of Detroit sports?
He could be.
You could make a case.
No.
All right, whatever.
Anyway, let's say goodbye to WCWA listeners in Toledo and DFN in Detroit. You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Feel free to log on and listen to
mailbag
the rest of the
too.
Show.
You got
to
hear that.
All right. By the way, one more spot before the mailbag, and I got to mention Luke.
Yeah, because I want to tell you who the most loved guy in Tiger history.
Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Management is somebody you should get to know. You should call him at 248-663-4748. He'll give you a complimentary consultation no matter what your age or financial situation. He'll help set you up for the future, create a plan to help you reach your financial goals, answer all your financial questions, no obligation. Retirement might be fast approaching. Make sure you are ready for it. And if you're younger, you know, life happens. You got to be prepared for future obligations. Check out Luke Nowacki. He will guide you through at 248-663-4748. We stand behind Luke. We know many of his clients, all of them extremely happy with the guidance they have gotten. And by the way, Securities Investment Advisory Services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Names, products, and services referenced here independent of Royal Alliance Associates. Again, Luke Nowacki, 248-663-4748.
You want to hear who it is? It's a contest between two people.
Oh, the most beloved
player in history with the person. Detroit Tigers.
Person.
Okay. It's either Al Kaline or Willie Horton.
I don't think so. Everybody loved Ernie Harwell. I mean, Ernie Harwell was a god. Kaline was too, of course. But Kaline's not even the greatest player in Detroit Tigers history. Come on.
Well, Kaline is still alive, and it's got a lot to do with the era that we're talking about. Okay,
yeah.
I mean, Al's been here a long,
I agree
long,
with that.
Long
I agree.
Time.
Because Willie Horton was Detroit-born, raised,
no,
still
wasn't.
Here.
He was born in
Virginia
or someplace.
Right, but he came here to play. Yeah. In fact, the biggest star player, as I said before, who was born here, raised here, played here, and came back here and stayed here is Kirk Gibson. But Willie Horton is a Detroiter, you know, is credited for solving the riot in 1960.
Well, let's go there.
Wait a minute.
Honest to God, I'll tell that story.
Okay. But Ernie, you know, and Ernie was, he was a modest man. And I said to him once, Ernie, how do you explain this incredible devotion and love people have for you? He said, because I showed up every day for 32 years and did my job.
He said,
it wasn't a big job, but it was my job. And he was the sweetest man, and he reached out to people because he felt that, he said, God put me here to do this job, and therefore he just wanted to bring people joy with signing autographs, talking to them, speaking for free, and he didn't make a lot of money. Jim Campbell fleeced him for many, many
years.
Gary Spicer came in finally and directed him to make a little money by the end of his career.
Right, you want to move on here then? And then I got something that's going to make Eli Zarrett feel good today, because he's been telling people on this show and elsewhere this for a long time, and folks don't want to believe it. But former referee Paul Stewart has a new book out entitled You Want to Go. Stewie was a big, tough guy in the minor leagues, a big brawler.
Did he get to the big leagues?
No, he never played in the NHL. Okay. Just was a great referee.
And what's the significance of a minor league umpire?
Good God, will you listen to me for once in your life?
I always listen, Bob.
Stewie was a great referee in the National Hockey
NHL
League.
Okay.
So, Paul Stewart, Denny, right? Okay.
But minor leagues, right?
No, NHL.
He wasn't a good enough player to play in the NHL.
Are we going to have to edit this out, this mindless banter here? Get to the point.
Go ahead, Bob.
So Paul Stewart says that Steve Yzerman was his least favorite player to deal with.
This is in
because
the book
the
now.
Wings the, captain, yep, showed really? Little respect for the officials. Stewie says, I made it my business to step up and defend the linesman, whom he treated most poorly, in my opinion. In Minnesota, Iserman berated a linesman to the point where I felt awful for this guy. It finally got to the point where I asked to meet with Scotty Bowman. Scotty told me Iserman had been very difficult to get under control, which corroborates what Eli's been saying here for some time. And so he says, I asked Scotty to strike some kind of a compromise. And Bowman had other players like Dougie Brown, Fetisov, Larionov, Chelios, who did not berate officials and could discuss penalties and calls with me going over without going over the top in a disrespectful manner. So Steve Iserman, you know, was not all sweetness and light, and they did apparently think about moving him because he clashed with Scotty, which is what you've been saying all along.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing about Stevie, he was a competitor, and that competitiveness gets out of hand once in a while when you get mad. When you get upset, you start saying things that you regret. As soon as you say them, I hope he regretted some of it. But the bottom line simply is, hey, you're out on the ice. You got all that emotion going on. You got all that, as they say, piss and vinegar flowing. You're going to do and say a lot of things you really don't mean.
Well,
and if referees can't take it, get another job.
Okay, move on, Bob. Go ahead.
And Bob did. Bob couldn't take it, so now he's in broadcast.
Let me tell you something. I never heard that you had a lot of problems with umpires whatsoever. You respected
Seldom.
Umpires.
I did.
You respected umpires.
I did.
And umpires always respect players. But I'll tell you something. I'm at umpire school in 1973
see
in Florida
what you did?
With all these
you
big guys
what
on
you
the
did?
Staff. Well, this has relevance.
We got to talk about it.
And I'll tell you why.
Please don't mention New York. Otherwise, we'll get a flood of calls. Go ahead.
I'm going to mention Detroit.
Okay.
And what I'm going to say is this. The umpires were talking about Al Kaline. And Bill Kinnaman, whom you knew very well,
yeah.
Bill Kinnaman says, you know, I knew I had arrived in the big leagues when after 6 years, Al Kaline finally spoke to me. I called a pitch a strike on him. He stepped back, got some dirt on his hands, looked straight down and said, bring the bleeping ball up. That's what umpires thought of Kaline. And I said, well, you can't say that about Al Kaline. I'm a kid at the umpire school, right? So then Larry Knapp, the legendary American League umpire, said, and there's Paige. He says, oh, you can't say that about Al Kaline, my hero. And I'm looking to dig a hole in the ground and crawl into it. So Kaline was a guy who didn't have a lot of respect for umpires. You did.
Well, then he may have argued with him. It doesn't mean he didn't respect him. He's just
He said he wouldn't even speak to him. Don't there. You? When, you know, Coach Carlson, hey, John, how you doing tonight? Have a good game, buddy. Sure, Danny, have a good game.
It's funny.
That's not good strategy.
It's funny you bring up Larry Knapp. Out of all the umpires, how the hell did you come up with him?
Because Larry Knapp was one of the chief instructors, and he made that comment
about me.
He made that comment laughing at
did
me because I said, Kaline's my hero.
Did he also do to you that he did to all the pitchers in Major League Baseball? Had the smallest strike zone in the history of the game? God, I think he was challenge height-wise, so he never saw the ball up.
He's working a Yankee game one day, and Yogi's behind the plate. And almost every pitch, real close, Yogi says, oh, I don't know, Knapp. That's a good pitch, Knapp. It's a good pitch. No. It's a good pitch. Barra comes to bat the next inning. Knapp calls strike three on the same pitch. Barra turns around, and he says, what? Okay, he says, that's what I'm trying to tell you, Barra. That pitch ain't a strike.
I'll tell you, when I was a young boy, 10, 11 years old, I got into an argument with the umpire. I got thrown out of a Little League ball game.
That's hard to do.
It is hard to do. In fact, later on, when I had my own kids and had both of them playing on the same Little League team, I got thrown out of one of those games, too. But my dad once told me, he says, if you ever argue with an umpire, it's just a waste of time because, number one, you can't win, and number two, they don't listen to you anyway. And if I ever catch you arguing with an umpire, I'm going to do something with that leather thing I wear around my waist. Yeah. I never, ever spoke badly to an umpire except one guy in the big leagues when he missed a 3-2 pitch.
Right.
And I went – I never went nuclear.
Do you remember which umpire that was?
I think it was Nestor. Not Nestor. Nestor Shylock.
Nestor Shylock, one of the legendary
umpires. One of the great umpires of all time.
Yeah. But isn't this an amazing thing now? Instead of seeing those little jerks, those creeps, Martin and Weaver out there and they're kicking dirt and screaming.
It's a shame.
Let's go to the replay.
Let's go to the replay. Isn't that a shame?
The manager calmly sits in the dugout and says, I think you missed that one. Let's look at the replay.
Throw the flag.
It's a relief.
Yep.
By the way, before you continue. 760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS. That's how we've been getting these text messages and voicemails. Also, asknofilter@gmail.com, and you can write us an email, and we'll read it on the air.
And don't forget the Twitter addresses. That would be at Eli Zaret, at MU2Denny, and at Bob Page Sports. I presume you're leading into the mailbag now.
Oh, God, yes.
Here's Dominic Vitale. He goes, wow, wow, wow. Great get, and what an interview with Pete Rose. Keep hearing Pete and Denny talking ball. I love that. Kudos to Ask No Filter. Good job, fellas. This guy's got the same area code I do, 561, and that's the Palm Beaches. So I guess he lives down there in Florida. Now, we have somebody named Joe Cucci steps forward. I was never able to listen to sports radio for more than a couple minutes. It seemed like just too much acting and fake outrage. But I love you knuckleheads for the same reason I listened to Drew and Mike all these years. Good conversation. Denny, I don't know how you put up with FBP and his New York attitude. Keep on his arse when needed. FBP. I never even heard of you before this show and wondered why the hell you were even on it. It took about four shows for me to decide that you could stay. Please tell Mrs. Ford she's limited to one or two sentences per show. P.S. I slept with Denny and Mickey Lolich. You ready for that?
What?
He slept with Denny and Mickey Lolich.
I'm
he says,
sorry.
I think it was the Free Press that had iron-ons of tiger faces, and my mom put those on my pillowcase. Yes, well, Joe, I want to thank you. I can't tell you how much I want to thank you for letting me stay on this show.
What's this?
It was so nice of you to hear from such an august personality as you, tolerating little old me. Oh, yeah, and bleeping Joe Cucci. Cucci, Cucci, coo, pal.
Oh, jeez. This is getting
out of here. Now let's move on. Eli, I just listened to the Thursday podcast. I love the show. But I wanted you to know that according to the podcast linked below, he sends a link to another show, the players on the Black Sox were well compensated for that time period, at least. Many of the Black Sox were paid at the higher end for their position. Well, this is from Ron Rocheleau, and he's right, but you know where he got this? There was a big article in the New York Times last week. Did you see that?
No.
Where they debunked all these theories about the 1919 Black Sox and what it was really all about. Not denying, of course, that a couple of them threw the World Series.
Well, they were all paid.
That's where this other podcast.
Okay, so in other words,
paid about $500 a piece, as I recall.
Yeah, and I think there
one guy was offered $10,000.
Now, if they were well paid, it means that the average salary was $2,000, and they got $2,020. But none of them made enough money to live on.
Yeah, here's Paul from Warren, Michigan. Eli, Denny, and Bob in capital letters. Thank you for this podcast. You keep me company while I'm at work. The content's invaluable. I find myself laughing out loud at work with my earbuds on, listening to you guys, and people staring at me thinking, guy's crazy. What's he laughing about? Guests have been spectacular. Just hearing Eli's unmistakable voice brings me back to my childhood.
Isn't that watching, sweet?
When they did a huge feature on Eli, and the reporter calls up Eli's mom, who was alive at the time. Mrs. Zaret, you know, how did Eli get this voice? What voice is that?
It's a mom for you.
So anyway, Denny is someone who has so much wisdom and experience. And Bob has a way with words that I often try to emulate in my own conversations. Kudos to Drew for getting this podcast out there. Paul, very flattering. We all thank you. I would just say this. One does not try to emulate anything. One simply emulates. Because emulate means to strive to equal or excel. So just say, I'm emulating. If you're a young pitcher, I'm emulating Denny McClain. Not going to make it, but I'm striving to equal or excel. I'm just a little linguist.
Yeah. Bless you, Bob. Bless you.
Okay. Here's Link Smith. The last time I saw Denny pitch was against the White Sox in Chicago. Denny, on multiple occasions, could not find a ball he wanted to use. The umpire, frustrated, I guess.
They were so cold.
Actually walked out. Is that what it was? Because he wanted to know what that was about, because the balls were too cold.
Yeah, the White Sox.
Remember that?
Yeah, I've told this story. But the White Sox used to keep all of their balls, baseballs, that is, right behind home plate in a refrigerated room. Not in a refrigerator, but in a refrigerated room. And that's where they kept the Coca-Cola and all the other stuff. And these balls would come out ice cold.
So it wasn't a strategic thing. It's just where they kept them.
No. It was strategic all the way, because every time you got a new ball, this thing.
Wouldn't that be harder for the hitters to hit it? It wouldn't go as far.
It was harder for the pitcher to throw it, too.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was ridiculous what they were doing. And they finally got caught, and then they had to change their whole setup over there.
Read the Norm Bannison one. That's kind of
interesting. I will in a second. I've got Marcus next. He says, this is for Denny McClain. Bob Page says you're not quick enough to slap the hell out of him. Just let me know, and I'll do it for you. I'll tell you what, Marcus. Denny ain't quick enough, and you ain't man enough, tough guy.
Okay. What Marcus, do you got, Eli? Marcus, send me a telegram. We'll no, set him up.
Of course, Norb says, worthless podcast, but I still
he always loves this. This is our attorney acquaintance.
He wants you to settle this about Earl Wilson. He says, Earl had 7 home runs in 68. Really?
No.
He must. He's going to look at it.
Check that. Will you, Brandon? Look 7 up. Home runs.
Well, Drysdale hit 7 one year. I think Earl did, too. That's the all-time record for
pitchers. Earl wasn't the kind of pitcher to...
But don't forget.
He didn't even want to pitch.
Well, I know, but this is before the DH. Three years before the DH.
He just wanted to look good.
His question was one of them as a pinch hitter?
So he was always a pinch hitter.
Earl was a pinch hitter
a lot.
Pinch
hit all the time.
Okay, well,
yeah,
then that's probably happened then. How many have any?
So he has 35 career home runs, 7 in 66 and 7 in 68.
Yeah, wow. Sure.
Wow. 30,
he was
35
awesome.
In his career?
35 in his career.
Oh, my
so
God.
So we can't answer that, Norm, but it's What's a good the, chance that one of them question? Was as a pinch hitter. What?
Oh, no.
The question was one of them as a pinch hitter.
He hit numerous home runs as a pinch hitter.
Another question for our younger listeners out there, because both Eli and Denny know the answer to this. Who was the first athlete in the history of sports to retain an agent?
That was
Earl Wilson.
Earl Wilson for Bob Wolf.
Bob Wolf in Boston.
That's right, Bob
Absolutely. Wolf. New drinking game. Girls drink free if Bob mentions he's from New York. Boys drink free if he mentions again that he's 1/16th Cherokee. Signed the dutiful Grosse Pointe Charles. Oh, Charles, you sniveling little bitch. I knew you so well in school in Grosse Pointe, and now out of mere spite and jealousy you have problems with me. I can't believe this, Charles. Pete Vitale. I think Denny's best 5 years in the majors almost rivaled Sandy Koufax's. Almost, not quite, but almost. Those are great 5 years, Denny. Compare the stats and tell me what you guys think. Thanks. I download the shows all the time. Hmm. Let me just say first, Pete.
I don't think
Denny
so.
Denny is way too modest to compare himself to Sandy Koufax. You have no comment on this.
Well, you won 20.
I'm
you
kidding.
Won 20, 31, and 24.
108, I won 108 in 5 years.
Because Koufax, let's see how many what Koufax won. Let's see what your record is. Koufax had 26 and the first breakout year of 61 he had was 14-7. That's a good question. I don't know how many Koufax won in that 5 year span.
Yeah, that final 5 years he went 14-7, 25-5, 19-5, 26-8, and 27-9.
I don't hear 31 in there.
I didn't hear
31.
Yeah. That's Koufax.
Add them up. Wait a minute. 27 and 26. What else do you have?
19.
25 and 14. Well, that's 13.
Not close.
Hey, this is going smoothly right now with Eli with pen and pencil over there and paper.
That's 111. He won 3 more. I don't know about the losses. Yeah.
Can't be.
Well, listen, I'm very good at the basic functions.
Not. No, you're not.
27, 26, 19, 27, 14 is 111. It's 13, 20.
Oh, 26. Jesus. You went to the University of Michigan, for Christ's sake.
You got no shot.
You can't add those numbers up.
It's 111.
Okay.
111.
Good. But as I said, I didn't hear any 31 in there in those numbers for Koufax. Yeah. So I think and I've always said this, if you look at the record, if you want to talk about 5 year spans and great players, for 5 years, offensively and defensively, one of the greatest players who ever lived, Don Mattingly. Look at the numbers.
Yeah, that could be
5 years. Nearly hurt his back.
But I got news for you. There are a lot of guys that have 5, 6, 7, and that's the way they try to measure people by 5 years.
Guys get hurt. Koufax gets hurt, and he goes to the Hall of Fame.
Right. And the kicker is there's so many guys that played solidly for especially their first 5 or 6 years in the big leagues because you come up there you're strong, you're doing all the right things, you're eating right, you're doing all the other things, and lo and behold you do something stupid or you slide into second base, break your ankle, one thing about this game, everybody leaves it hurt. Everybody. There's never a guy that ever left this game that wasn't hurt.
Well, it's not the NFL, for Christ's sake, or the NHL.
I'm talking about arms, elbows, shoulders, ankles.
If you're a pitcher, of course.
Hips. No, hitters, too. Think about the number of times that I threw a ball just working out and the number of times a hitter goes every day and swings the bat 50, 100, 200 times. Every day. Even during our day, they did that.
Now, I will say this, because I remember Dwight Gooden.
Yeah.
Had the most wins before age 26 or through to age 25, and that broke your record. So since you don't like the fact that I added up Koufax to have more wins than
you. It is what it is.
You just added it up very poorly and very slowly, that's all.
Are you kidding? That took seconds. Nobody adds faster than me. And but I think your arm was dead by the time you were 25.
Yes.
Because in 69, right, you were 25, and that's when you had your last big season. So there was that. I don't know how many.
Yeah. I got one more thing in the mailbag this week, folks. It comes via Twitter from our regular listener, Bob Cummer. He says, Bob, I hope you're going to join me in rooting for the FLs tomorrow. He wrote this on Sunday. Any given Sunday or Monday, thank you in advance. But, Bob, my favorite team in the entire National Football League is playing Monday night. I'm supposed to root against them? My favorite team? Any team playing the FLs is my favorite team in the NFL.
Is that what your official position is?
I told you that story.
I will say this. I did grow up as a Jets fan before I moved to Michigan.
Sure you did.
You're a Giants fan, too.
I was a Giants fan,
unusual,
too. Unusual. I like them both. But and the Jets finally won yesterday, showing what a difference
Sunday
quarterback makes.
And
yeah.
See, I'm born and raised in Chicago. I've been a Bears fan all my life. But you know what? I live here, and I still pull for the Lions.
Well, I do, too. But, you know, going back to my youth, I still keep an eye on my New York teams, and I was pleased to see that. In fact, they showed the Jets game here in this market.
Well, it was a big national game of the day.
But isn't it great about the Jets game? You always know where to look in the standings last.
At the bottom, yeah.
You never have to worry about trying to find
something. Well, most of us thought the Jets would be pretty good this year, maybe 9-7.
I did, too.
And then, of course, Darnold gets hurt, and it's a whole different thing. But I can't believe you're surprised when I just said what I did, because I told you guys this story. Embarrassingly enough, I'd never been to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Really?
So about two or three
years. I've never been there.
You should be embarrassed, too.
I'm embarrassed.
So two or three years ago, I decided, this is silly. I'm driving back from Detroit down to West Palm Beach. So I'm going a little out of my way, and I'm going to go to Canton and see the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Wow, it was a lot of fun.
I
walk in, and there's some nice, attractive young ladies sitting behind the desk to take your money, you buy a ticket. And when she does that, she asks everybody what their favorite NFL team is. So she said to me, sir, what's your favorite NFL team? And I said, I want you to listen to me. I'm serious, and I want you to write this down.
Don't. You shouldn't do that.
And I said,
this turns our audience off.
Any team playing the Detroit Lions is my favorite. They stole my football team. You were a Jets and Giants fan. I was a Lions fan. And the Ford stole my football team. They thumbed their noses at us. They laughed at us. And they're never going to sell it. And it's a joke.
One of the reasons why our listeners don't like you. There's so many reasons.
Our listeners love me, pal. I got a couple of them don't. So what?
Bob, how can you pick the 1 out of 10 letters? Go ahead.
How can he not pull for the Lions with a coach by the name of Patricia?
Is that a man?
I don't know.
They just said they were hiring Patricia, and I thought, wonderful.
This show has deteriorated. I think it's time.
Not, because we're going to talk about a couple other things here. The Wings are off to a pretty good start, despite losing Saturday night at home to Babs in Toronto. But, you know, we talked about the Pistons having all these problems down there at Little Caesars drawing. Now, I see that the Wings, and expectations are not pretty good. The Wings are having a special promotion. I guess it was a 3-day deal. Monday is the last day, where you can buy a ticket to any and all remaining Detroit Red Wings home games if you do it quickly for $20.
Yeah, you know,
how desperate they are.
$20 a game.
$20 per game.
I saw them advertising. I was shocked because
the hell is that?
You know, it's a very interesting arena. Beautiful. We were there for the game last week against Anaheim. And just fabulous arena beyond belief. It is one of the you know, obviously the number one in North America.
That's what they say.
Or anywhere in the world. But it's very quiet, and it lacks the intensity of Joe Louis Arena, which was one of the worst arenas ever built. But there was a rock'em sock'em just aura of excitement there. And there are times when the Wings play at this place where it's just so quiet. You can hear the skates, you know, scraping and all that. And
yes.
It's very, very interesting. The acoustics are strange. Anyway.
You see about the St. Louis Blues, Denny, because we had talked about this several shows ago. They are going to visit the White House. As a matter of fact, that's going to happen, I think, tomorrow, Tuesday, as we record this. Now, reports are that once the defending Stanley Cup champs received the invitation from Mr. Trump, there was not much of a discussion about whether to go. The team views it as an honor and a rite of passage as champions.
Too.
The Blues will be making a special trip to Washington. This does not coincide with a visit to play the Capitals. So this is what the St. Louis Blues think of that. And remember, most of those kids are not Americans even.
Right, right. And I agree, too. If I get an invitation to the White House, I'm going. I'm going. I'd love to, I'm not sure if I'd love to meet him, but I would meet him. I would congratulate him, and I would give him the respect that the office deserves. But, you know, people disagree, and we all have the right to disagree.
Mr. Trump lives approximately 18 minutes out my door in Palm Beach Island. I stop by his house all the time. Say, hey, is Don around? I thought, well, you don't have a cup of coffee or a drink or something like that. They always lie to me. They tell me he's not there or he's not available or something.
Go call me.
Well,
I'll go with you.
You got that. You got the
poll. Since you guys are droning on.
No, we're not, damn it. This is interesting stuff. Now, the Detroit News reported
I got
late
a
last
couple
week.
Stories here, too.
See, I got a couple of quickies. Go ahead, Bob.
Detroit News reported.
Bore me for another minute while I find my notes here. Go ahead. Keep talking.
If you're bored, you're boring.
Bob, hurry.
Lie. Hurry. Denny, you want to go right now?
No, I don't know. It's got nothing to do with the bathroom.
I know what the feeling's like. We're all older.
It's not that, Bob.
All right. Go ahead.
Detroit News reported that the Illich family, this is just the other day, still owns some 190 vacant properties in the so-called District Detroit area that they haven't developed. Now, Professor John Moak is a prominent expert in this field. He's at Wayne State. And he says, he reminds people that the Illich has made a huge commitment to stay in the city of Detroit when most other businesses had fled. And in the wake of this latest report, again, it's just a BS little one line from the PR department. Here's what they need. The Illich family needs much better PR advice than they're getting, and they have to come clean. They have to call a news conference, Mary and Chris and anybody else, and they have to tell us why this project has taken so long and what's – don't stonewall the public on this.
I hope it goes away. Anyway, a couple notes, okay?
And I do too, and I got a couple for you.
Meanwhile, we had that Penn State guy who wrote and was so upset about the fact that their star player had dreadlocks. The players came out this week with T-shirts that said chains, tattoos, dreads, and we are.
Franklin didn't like it.
Yeah, Franklin did not like that and confiscated them. The other note.
Well, Eli, he didn't like it because they didn't clear it with him. They just came out wearing these shirts. If the coach, this is how we feel, he might have let them do it. Yeah.
He said it was compliance. So Aaron Jones is running against a touchdown against Dallas a week ago, and he turns around and he waves at cornerback Byron Jones before he crosses the goal line, and he was fined $10,000 for that unsportsmanlike conduct. You know, it's interesting. We see this on every play where I was just watching the Jets-Dallas game, and a guy makes a sack, and he does this little dance for the camera. He runs, 15 yards down the field. That's what bothers me. But what do? They always show it in replay.
Always.
And you know what? I don't mind what anybody wears. You can wear your hair as long as you want. I had long hair. It's the way you look. You can shave the hair off. Tattoos, I don't necessarily get tattoos, but that's a personal decision. But I don't know why they glorify this attention, these attention-getting devices. It drives me crazy. And one of the things this guy said, who I disagree with him about the tattoos and how it doesn't represent Penn State and everything, was that NFL players and college players that celebrate and bring attention to themselves in every play.
Yeah,
it does drive me crazy.
Now, here's another thing about this for you, Denny. We had a note from Iffy the Dopester, our regular contributor in the program. He had a picture of an old-time, way back old-time Detroit Tiger in full uniform, Cadillacing around the bases on his bike, just for fun, you know. So he says, I've heard of Cadillacing around the bases. Who was the slowest Cadillacer that Denny McClain remembers rounding the bases after a home run he gave up, and did chin music follow? Guys do that to you? Did guys
do? I have no idea.
Guys do that to you? Did they Cadillac around the bases?
It was not a part of the game back then like it is today. And I don't think the kids today do it to spite the pitcher. I don't believe they do that. I think they just get carried away with themselves, and everybody wants to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I think that's – they're all looking for endorsements. Every one of these kids is looking for the next deal that they can come – like $10 million a year isn't enough. I don't quite get it because I think it looks childish. I think it looks minor leaguish. But you know what? One day they'll clean that up too. Eventually they're going to clean it up. Like the Yankees, they don't really let you wear long hair.
In your day, you guys cleaned it up yourself.
We cleaned it up ourselves. That's exactly right. And I got two other things.
Let me just say. So the point is you can show off all you want. Now, Golden Tate scored a touchdown for the Giants, turned around on the five-yard line, and basically backpedaled in.
And that's a Notre Dame kid who, you think
so the point is, so the fact that he waived Aaron Jones, that's $10,000. So this behavior is allowed, and it's glorified by the networks. I always mention
and the league.
Because I watched TV the day Roger Maris hit his 61st home run. Can you imagine today? He put his head down. He ran to first base. He never looked at the pitcher. He went right into the dugout without smiling, and they forced him to come out and take his – the phrase is, act like you've been there.
When I gave up number 535 to Mantle, all he did was touch first base, second base, didn't wave to anybody. Between third base and home, he looked at me and said, thank you. That's all he said, stepped on home plate, went in the dugout, and the poor 15 or 20,000 people who were in the ballpark that day gave him a standing ovation. He came out of the dugout for about a minute and a half, tipped his cap, and went back in the dugout. And he was totally embarrassed by coming out of the dugout.
And then this poor Chase Winovich, such a great player at Michigan, a great kid. He said the other day, somebody tipped the ball on a pass rush. He scores a touchdown. Chase gets his touchdown, and then the NFL fines him like $10,000 for an excessive celebration. Chase Winovich.
One other thing we forgot about earlier with this juice ball. Verlander was trying to imply, as well as somebody else, and I can't think of the guy's name, I forgot to write it down. What they were trying to say is, now that Major League Baseball owns the ball company, a lot of things production-wise have changed. And somehow or other, this stamp that they put on the ball has altered the ball.
We talked about that.
Because I know that. But what they're saying is, it has, the production was, I'm not sure, at fault or faulty or something with the balls. So maybe they got a couple hundred dozen balls that are affected by whatever happened. But that's what they implied, that it had a lot to do with the stamp.
Mr. Zaret and I are going to continue our long running argument over how important, actually, that a certain outfielder named Rupert Jones was to the 84 Tigers' success. Rupert's coming on the show with us on Thursday,
and we're
going to have it out then.
Did you know, by the way, for the first time in nearly 100 years in college football, BYU started a black quarterback, Jaren Hall, last weekend? I was surprised. I did not know that. He said, it's an honor and a privilege to be here and to be playing this sport at this wonderful university. I did not know until 1978 the church, the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, did not allow black people to enter temples for specific ordinances, and black men were not eligible for the priesthood. Did not know that you could discriminate.
The shocking thing about that is, I think Joseph's my longtime significant other, Lara, went to the University of Utah, not a Mormon, of course. So we go to these alumni events sometimes in New York. The last one I couldn't believe. Mormons were sitting around, and they were, are you ready for this? They were drinking caffeinated Pepsi.
No.
You can drink caffeine now as long as it's cold and it's on ice. Still no tea, no coffee, but now Mormons can drink caffeinated drinks with ice in it.
Oh, another one.
Fantastic.
We
don't do religion on this show, so let's move on.
Two notes about female athletes. We give their the fairer sex at the time. Coco Gauff, who starred at the U.S. Open, and then she was blown out by Naomi Osaka, and she made national news when Osaka called her into the interview on the court, and they were crying. And she's 15. She won a serious ladies' event in Austria over the weekend. My question for you is, could a 15-year-old man/boy win any professional tournament?
Girls get their growth and development earlier than men. You know that.
Good
Everybody
point.
Knows.
Okay, I'll buy that. And Simone Biles, the greatest female athlete of all
greatest
time.
Greatest athlete. Let me tell you, only gymnast, I'm telling you, the greatest athlete we've ever seen.
Let's see her hit
life.
A pitched curveball at the minor league level.
When you see her, when they show slow-mo of her jumping,
unbelievable.
She's about 5'1". She could out-jump by a foot anybody in the WNBA.
She can dunk a basketball. That's pretty interesting. Can she dunk a basketball?
And I'm looking, and Lonzo Ball, we were looking at it beforehand. You know, I don't get tattoos, especially I don't get tattoos on black guys.
Let's not go there again, because you take umbrage to it.
No, but he has tattoos on his arms now of every great black figure in history, from Harriet Tubman to Barack Obama to Rosa Parks.
It's like they're pictures. They're photographs.
Amazing. It is the most incredible artwork I've ever seen. You couldn't have taken a photograph and pasted it on his arm and look any more realistic.
I say that was $50,000 ahead, and you wonder why so many NBA and NFL players are broke within 5 years of leaving the game.
Yeah, MLK, Malcolm X, Tubman, Jackie Robinson was just incredible. Just
they're photographs. How do you do something like that?
Now I'm giving you my prediction for the next 10 days, 2 weeks. Look for the coach in Dallas to be fired.
Oh, could be.
Now, Jerry Jones came players, out after the game on Sunday and said he's okay.
I don't. Jerry Jones
kiss
is
of death.
Jerry Jones is a kiss of death. The players are not high-fiving Garrett anymore. They're not talking to him anymore. When he comes over to them to congratulate him, they walk away. That's not a
really?
Good sign.
They've yep. lost three straight.
Everybody yeah. said 6 weeks ago, let's just cancel the season, start with the Super Bowl because it's Dallas against yeah. New England. Yeah. How do you like what everybody was saying? No. You
know? But I got a very positive moment as we close out the show.
Go ahead.
Romo?
Yeah.
The broadcast. It does a pretty good job, doesn't
good.
It?
Good. I like Romo.
He really does. He is a marksman chess player. He is unbelievable as a chess player.
Great golfer. Great
yeah,
golfer.
Yeah. Golfer, yeah. too. Yeah. But he's a chess player. He played golf or played chess on TV the other day between quarters or halves or whatever it was. Huh. And the guy, I mean, the moves were boom, 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 hmm. boom. It was unbelievable.
The most well-rounded athlete I ever met in my life. He was also a Ooh. Terrific chess player. Ooh. He was also a great golfer. He was a great fisherman.
Bob always waits till the end.
I
gives
do.
The whole story, then go. He gives you the
It's
the
called dramatic end. Effect, and that would be Bill Laimbeer. Bill Laimbeer is amazing how good he was at so very many different things.
Yeah, amazing hand-eye coordination for a man that large and so seemingly uncoordinated.
Could he throw a curveball?
No, nor could he hit one.
Could he fly a plane?
Yeah, could you drive to the hole with Laimbeer standing in the middle? Could you want to check him on the basketball court?
Could he jump over the Sunday New York Times?
No, he couldn't jump too much.
No,
and every time Billy laid one of his cheap shots, worst cheap shot artist ever on anybody, he went and hid behind Ricky Mahorn's skirts. I'll tell you that much.
You know what? One day I'll tell you a Bill Laimbeer story.
No, he threw a punch at Brad Daugherty.
He threw a punch. And then he hit under Ricky's skirts, right?
All right, hey, it's enough already.
Enough. Do I have any more? No, I don't have any
Thank you for listening. We'll see you again Thursday for another edition of No Filter
Thanks,
Sports.
Folks.
Have a great week.